Welcome, everyone, to episode 134 of the NBA podcast. Today, we need to say bye, Felicia, to the teams that got knocked out in the Western Conference first round. So that includes the Oklahoma City Thunder, Portland Trail Blazers, Minnesota Timberwolves, and San Antonio Spurs. We'll be breaking down all of the big questions that await them this offseason. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, it's going well, Brian. I'm looking at the playoff standings right now, and I'm kind of loving where we are at. Only two game sevens, so I'm not forced into watching four games at night.
That's gonna be nice, and we get to just slander some teams for the next hour, so that's gonna be fun too.
Well, you know me, I don't slander, I critique, Brian.
All right, Mort, so let's start with the Oklahoma City Thunder, because they have obviously one of the dilemmas of the summer. Paul George is widely expected to decline his player option for 2018-19, become an unrestricted free agent. What do you think happens with him, Mort? Do you think he stays in OKC? Does he go to the Lakers? Does he go somewhere else?
So this is going to be a hot take. Okay. This is going to be scorching hot. I think you go to Paul George this summer. Mm-hmm. You tell him, we really want you back. Mm-hmm. We're willing to give you a max. And we promise to trade Russell Westbrook.
Ooh. Wow. Well, what's his incentive to stay then?
Well, you trade Russell Westbrook for a player that will actually play team basketball.
All right, so we're going into the Westbrook discussion now too. I like it.
Yes, we are. Because, look, I know you had a whole bunch of bullet points here. And yeah. Sorry, but I don't care. Let's talk about Westbrook because he's a problem. And he's not a problem in the, he's a problem for the opponents. No, he's a problem for his own damn team.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I said it last night on Twitter. I said that this was like the most, game six was the most live by the Westbrook, die by the Westbrook
completely
game, possibly of his career. Because like he was, you know, you look at the box score and he was phenomenal. Like, If you're just looking at pure
the raw stats,
right? Like 46 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. You know, Paul George was 2 of 16 from the field, had more turnovers, 6 than points, 5. But then you also look and you say, all right, Westbrook had 46 points on 43 shots.
Right.
He took 19 3-point attempts.
Look, we need to get real about this for a moment. Russell Westbrook is 29 years old. He's going to be 30. He's going to be 30 this year.
Yeah, in November.
In November. And next year, he has a $205 million extension kicking in.
Yep.
Can we agree that his athleticism is a huge part of his game?
Oh, absolutely.
Can we also agree that usually that does not have a strong track record of holding up?
We most certainly can, yes.
Okay. And can we also agree that he is more focused on triple-doubles and stats than he is anything else, really? At least, can we agree that it's a discussion?
I would still say, I mean, I don't think he's like, I think if you had, you know, gave him the option of like, do you want to average a triple-double or win a championship? He would say, win a championship. But his style of play does not always indicate that.
Mm, fair. The Oklahoma City Thunder need to trade Russell Westbrook this summer, 2018.
I mean, you're right that it is.
It's bad.
It's a jarring take, but I don't entirely disagree. There's a lot of factors that go into this.
Yes, so, there is.
So if Paul George leaves, I don't think you could do it because then you just have like washed up Melo as your number one star most likely, and that's not going to go over well with the fan base. And you know, the fan base has an attachment to him because James Harden got traded, Kevin Durant left. Westbrook's the one who says he wants to stay there forever. He signed the contract extension. Like, there is, you know, perceived loyalty from Russell Westbrook to the organization. So I think, you know, you can't consider really what fans think about when you're making these big decisions, or else, you know, like, fans got mad when Sam Hinkie traded Michael Carter Williams and looked at how that worked out. So, right. You know, you have to do what's best for your basketball organization. And I agree, Mort. Like, that contract is going to be very bad by the end of it.
It's not just going to be bad at the end of it. It's going to be bad in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's going to be very... It's going to be, like, prohibitive to build around Russell Westbrook because he's making 35% of the salary cap starting next season. So it's going to be very difficult, you know, between him and Steven Adams alone. This is not an insult to Steven Adams, who's an excellent player, but those two guys alone are making what, $59.5 million. The salary cap is going to be $101 million. So like OKC is in cap hell, regardless of what happens with Paul George, because we can agree that Carmelo Anthony is not going to decline his $27.9 million player option. I don't care. Yeah, like he might be upset that he got benched toward the end of games 5 and 6, but like he's not recouping that money on the free agent market this summer. He's going to just cash his checks for one more year. Then he might go ring chasing in 2019. But like OKC's kind of boned, at least in terms of roster construction, regardless of what happens with Paul George. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's at least a conversation that OKC needs to have, whether it's what can you get back for Russell Westbrook?
Oh, I'm way ahead of you there.
Okay. So who would you go after?
So there's a recently hired GM who really loves star power. His owner does too.
Oh, no.
And his owner is, strangely enough, affiliated with Russell Westbrook in terms of his shoe deal.
Oh, no.
And Kemba Walker is sort of on the market.
Yeah.
And you know Mitch Kupchak, he loves a star.
Yep. That's not.
And we also know that the Charlotte franchise, they really want to earn money.
Yep.
And they want to get butts in seats and sell jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
There's a deal there. Some way, somehow. I'm not sure. I still need...
Like, maybe Kemba, obviously.
Kemba, then... Nick Batum, maybe. Like, to get out of... I mean, he's good, but you probably make that sacrifice also because of his deal. Like,
right.
Westbrook for those two. Some, I don't know how it should be financed or how it should be... Or not how it should be completed. But that's kind of the main things involved in that package. If you get Kemba Walker back and you play him with Paul George, I'm sorry, that's a much better duo.
Yeah, OKC says no to that.
I know they do, but that's like they do because of the emotional attachment.
Right.
But can you honestly tell me at this point that Russell Westbrook is worlds ahead of Kemba Walker as a basketball player?
I think you still can. I think that the Westbrook hate, there was a lot of Russell Westbrook slander after game 4 and even after game 6 because of, you know, some of these dickhead shots that he took, especially toward the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's still, when he's on, like what we saw from him in game 5, there are a few players in the NBA who can single-handedly take over a game like Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, and one of them, like, is Kemba Walker.
I don't think Kemba Walker has as high of a ceiling as Russell Westbrook.
I don't know if I agree with you. Yeah, he has a higher floor, but that's important too because that's the day to day.
Right.
The day to day thing is important.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that, but I think Westbrook, I agree, it's going to be a challenge to build around him, regardless of what happens with Paul George. But I think if you tell Paul George, hey, we're trading Russell Westbrook, but we're willing to re-sign you, he says, peace, I'm going to the Lakers.
That's the thing. You have to turn it into a debate. You have to give him, like, an option. You have to tell Paul, look, we want to keep you.
Right.
And we want to hear from you. Do you want to keep playing with Russ?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go forward with somebody else? Because we'll make a deal. I'll go that far. Here's what I'll say, and this is even a more scorching hot take. I think Russell Westbrook, at best, has another 3 seasons left of high performance.
Hmm.
At best. He's going to decline athletically. That means his ceiling is lowered in terms of his impact. Look, last year when he won the MVP, I was high on him when he made 200 threes. The highest he'd ever made was 101 the year before. Like, he increased it by 99, and he even like hit 34% like of those shots.
Yeah.
Now that's it. We're looking at it now. That was an anomaly. That was not the new standard.
Yeah.
That was the outlier. We are looking at a guy who is severely flawed in terms of his fundamentals. Look, let's just call it what it is. Steven Adams jumps out of the way to let Russ grab those boards.
Right.
His 10 rebounds a game, that's a joke. It's always been a joke.
Yeah.
The playmaking is fine. He's turning the ball over at an insane degree, but he's doing that because he's a high-volume guy, so the turnover percentage isn't as bad as people make it out to be, but it's still there. It's still bad.
Yeah.
Going back to Kemba. Kemba is not that dependent on his athletic ability. He's got a ground game. He's got an established floor game. He's a better shooter. He's a better pick and roll player. He's a better ball handler / leader. There's just so much more to him, and he will age more gracefully than Russ will. And regardless, he's going to be on a cheaper contract as well. He's going to be more manageable. He's younger. He's younger.
Yeah,
I don't see a downside.
He turns 28 in early May, so he's like a year and a half younger.
He'll fit perfectly with Paul George's age.
Yeah, the problem is he's a free agent in 2019. So
then you re-sign him.
Yeah, but he could leave.
You could sign an extension.
He's not re-signing an extension.
For the right money?
No, you can't offer him enough money.
Okay, fair enough.
He's going to become a free agent.
Fine, but he'll have a year with Paul George. That's like the best teammate he's ever had.
Yeah, I think the only thing, if you're OKC, the best pitch you can give Paul George is, A, we can give you more money, at least on a longer-term deal. B, Andre Robertson would have made a huge impact in that Utah series.
Agreed.
Like, we were flawed without him.
Yeah.
We will have him back next year. Let's run it back with what, just opt into your, or like, don't even, you can decline your player option, sign a 1+1 deal, give us one more year, and let's see what happens. I mean, obviously they'd offer a full 5-year max if he wants to go that route, but otherwise they could say, do the 1+1, let's see what happens. After that, Melo will be off the books as well, so then we can actually have a little bit more cap space to build around you and Russ and Steven Adams. But with Roberson, we should be a more complete team.
Yeah, we'll be a more complete team. We'll make it out of the first round, then Russ will shoot us to death in the second round.
Right.
But Come on.
That's the selling point for Paul George. I mean, that's all they have. I don't think in the first year of Westbrook's extension, I don't think they would seriously consider trading him. I could be wrong, but
no, I
just
get that.
Don't think it. And if they do, it's going to send, it's going to send the same message that happened with Blake Griffin and the Pistons. Like, that sends kind of a bad message to fellow free agents. Like, hey, this guy professed his loyalty to you and you went up and traded him a year later. Like, what's stopping you from doing the same to me? Like, I think that perception would stop OKC from making such a move.
All right, so they want to maintain a perception that we are maxing out a player who is overwhelmingly flawed, who puts up a lot of empty stats, and is more often than not shooting us out of ball games. I mean, at the end of the day, we just have to be real about this. I know, look, I feel the same way as most do. Russell Westbrook is enormously entertaining. Like, I understand that he draws a lot of attention. He's fun. He is fun to watch. He plays with his heart on his sleeve. As a fan, you love it. But is he even better than Paul George? I would argue he isn't. Like, where the defense hasn't been existing on him for 5 years.
Yeah, in two-way impact, I think it's more of an argument. But then look at what happened with Paul George last night. Like, it's hard to ignore 2 of 16. Like, he was not even looking for his shot at the end of that game.
Yeah, I get that. But what, 43 shots, 19 threes? If you, Duncan Smith had a good tweet. Like, if you gave Steph Curry 43 shots and 19 threes, he would score a hell of a lot more points than 46 points.
He would have 70 for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of your thing for the pitch to Paul George as well is maybe Billy Donovan isn't the right coach for us. We need someone who will keep Russell Westbrook more in check. And, like, you know, yes, Westbrook is not a perfect player, but I think if you find the right coach who can rein in some of those bad Russ tendencies, and maybe it's Billy Donovan, maybe he sees his approach with Russ this year didn't work. And, like, you know, last year he needed Russ to do this because they just didn't have the complementary talent around him. They were still shaken about the KD leaving. This year they had, you know, Melo's washed, but they had Paul George. They have Steven Adams. Like, they need to get guys more involved. I absolutely 100% agree that, like, this Westbrook is the alpha and the omega of our system. That is not a functional way to continue moving forward. Like, there is no disagreement for me there. I just don't think... I don't think that, A, they would trade him this summer, and B, I think that the pitch to Paul George, you know, is like, help us help Westbrook, basically. Like, take help a us larger help. Role.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, no,
so,
it makes sense.
You know, like, so Westbrook doesn't shoot 43 times. Like,
but
you,
that should be necessary.
Yeah,
that shouldn't be necessary. And also, like, even if he's reined in, right? And you've got a good point on that one. Like, if you could find a coach that could reel him in and make him more effective, that's definitely a good thing. But then I'm looking at 2021, where he's 32 years old, and he's going to be earning $41 million a year.
Yeah.
That season. And onwards, it's going to be jumped to almost 44, and then it's going to jump to almost 47.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be as effective either way. He's going to be 30, and he is athletically a marble, obviously, but it's not LeBron James caliber because LeBron James has a floor game that's so much more established.
Right.
I see so many hurting months and years for OKC fans in the coming years regarding Westbrook. And I know you made a hell of a point earlier when you said there's a connection there with the fan base.
Yeah.
I think that's a problem. It seems to me that Thunder fans are almost intertwined with Russ as so there is one unit and not separate units.
Right.
That if by trading Russ, you effectively just remove the heart of the fan.
Yeah.
That's a problem as well, because that gives you no flexibility when he goes rogue, which he does. And you and I are on Twitter a lot. We see Thunder fans defend Russ even if he goes, you know, 12 of 37.
Right.
Which is ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what it is. There's something there that just does not work. And if Thunder fans prefers the Russ that they have until he, you know, retires and... fine, so be it. Then I'll just ignore that franchise because that's a bad plan. I think that's a very bad plan. Not adjusting during the middle of a very, very essential traveling expedition where you go for the championship ring. I think that's, you need to course correct.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it is. But enough on Westbrook. We could fill a whole episode, but I just think it's a problem. I think he should be traded. I think you should give Paul George that chance to determine the outcome. And maybe it's because I look at Paul George and I see an intelligent basketball player. I think he sees these things. He's playing with Russ. I think he sees those lines and he sees the play and he goes, really? Really? You did that? Why?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're wrong. But again, like, he had an opportunity to change things in game six, at least, and shot 2 of 16.
Yeah, so, no, that's fair. Paul George does not come without his warts either. That's like perfectly accurate.
Playoff P went missing.
PP. Yeah. No, he lived up to his name that game. He was PP.
Right. He most certainly did play like PP. But, you know, the rest of the series, to his credit, he played very well. And, like, he along with Westbrook, I feel like game five was the perfect, like, example of, like, here's what you guys could do together if both of you guys are on your game. Like, you were down 25 points in the third quarter, and you still came back against the league's best defense. Yes, Gobert was in foul trouble, which obviously had a huge impact. Like, both of those guys were driving freely to the rim. But, like, you know, this is the fully actualized version. Like, do this, get Roberson back, convince Anthony that he's washed and that he needs to come off the bench and, like, not play as many minutes. Like, this could be something. But, I mean, personally, I think if we had to rank the likelihood of Paul George staying, or, like, rank the likelihood of his destinations this summer, I think L.A. is far and away number one.
Yeah.
I think OKC is still number two. I think Philly is number three. And I think Philly should be higher, but he has given no indication that he's considering it.
No, but I would agree. They should be number one, honestly. Like, that would just fit him like a glove.
Yeah, if you're looking, it's like it all comes down to what he's looking for, which we don't know. Like, is the money most important? Is winning most important? Or is it, like, do you want to be the face of your franchise? Because in OKC, you won't be with Russ. In Philly, you know, you'll share co-billing with Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, but you're not going to be, like, the front and center star. The Lakers, you're going to be the front and center star.
Right.
Like, Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball.
And it's homecoming.
Yeah, right. And, like, those guys could get to that level one day, but right now, like, Paul George would be, you know, what Carmelo Anthony was back in New York.
Yeah.
So if that's, like, what's most important to him, I mean, I think, really, that's, you know, those three options all point to one clear winner. If he wants to be the face of the franchise, he's going to Lakers. If he wants the money, he's staying in OKC. If he cares most about winning, he's going to Philly.
Well, in Philly, he still has an advantage because, like you said, he would have to share it, but he would still get top billing.
Yeah,
like he would have to share it, and you could win, and you could still earn a lot of money in Philly. Like, it's not like you're limited to the mid-level exception. Like,
make right. They waived they stretched Jared Bayless there at the max for Paul George, not for LeBron, but.
No,
Paul George, they're immediately there. Like, they have to do zero legwork.
It seems like such a no-brainer to me that it should be Philly. I mean, and that would also lessen the hurt when Mikal Bridges is not drafted by Philly. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, in theory, I mean, that, you know, going to a team like that, if you have a 2-for-16 game, it's not the end of the world. Whereas on a Lakers team, like, you're going to be expected to take 25 shots a game. So,
which isn't his game.
Right. So
it's never been his game.
Yeah, like, I don't know what's most important to him. And I think we'll infer a lot from his free agent decision this summer. Yeah. Wherever he chooses, I think we'll learn a lot about what is driving where he ends up.
Man, I can't wait for Westbrook the year after if Paul George leaves. He'll be so happy because he can just focus on stats.
Yeah, he can get a third straight season of triple-doubling.
Yeah, that's all that matters, so that's fine.
All right, enough Westbrook slander. Let's move on and slander Damian Lillard instead.
No, I refuse to slander those guys. Come on.
Do you? Because they play... I mean, CJ, as you said,
so
was
bad, but...
CJ was better than Dame. Dame played like shit in that series.
Well, we just talked about Drew Holiday. Come on.
I know. You mean that? But, like, 35%. I mean, this guy,
right?
He could be an all NBA first team player. Like, that was just a goose egg.
It was.
Like, start to finish from Damian Lillard.
Absolutely.
So, that begs the question, Mort. Portland is in terrible salary cap shape.
Yes, they are.
After their drunken spending spree of 2016, where they signed Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard, all of these big 4-year deals.
Yeah.
So they, even with not even considering their restricted free agents and their unrestricted free agents, they already have $110 million on the books for next season. The salary cap is supposed to be somewhere, I think at like $123 million, somewhere around there, like low 120s. So, do they need to break up Dame and CJ?
Nope. No. Look, this playoff series, if that had not been a sweep, like if that had gone 7, nobody would be asking this question.
That's true.
And shit happens. Look, Drew figured out Dame. Like, sometimes a player just gets it. Yeah. Like, he takes it, and he is beaten straight up. Dame did not have response for Drew throughout 4 games. He could not figure out that defense. And you know what? That's fine. I am sure that Dame, the player that he is looking at that film again and again and again over the course of a summer going, okay, next time I'm up against Drew Holiday, I need to figure out how to avoid these things. Okay, he took away my right hand on these drives. Okay, he took away this angle on my jump shot here. Like, I think there's still more to be had in that duo. I don't think you alter that backcourt on 4 games. You don't. It's just too small of a bad sample size to where things just went wrong. Things just went bad. It happens. I'm not there yet. Like, if this had been a trend of his for years, I would have said yes long ago. But it hasn't. Like, this is the first. I'm just gonna look at his numbers, like playoff numbers. I don't think I've ever looked at the efficiency. Like, okay, playoffs in advance when you look at Basketball Reference. Mm-hmm. Like, he was fine the first 4 times he was in the playoffs. Wasn't like, didn't shatter worlds like Thanos, but I mean, it was fine. I mean, it was like all-star level.
Yeah.
This is the first time around that he really struggled. He had a 9.5 PER and a true shooting percentage of 47. Like, that was just so bad. But it's a grand total of 162 minutes. I'm not ready to make that decision based on 162 minutes. No. No for me. I'm giving them one more year.
Yeah. I mean, I think that series surfaced a lot of the concerns we've had about Portland for a long time. Mm. Is that... those guys are an undersized backcourt. So defensively, that leads to some challenges and it leads to some matchup advantages when, you know, Pelicans, as we said earlier, have a likewise undersized backcourt, but that wasn't an issue against Portland like it will be against Golden State.
Right.
2, if one of those guys isn't going off, they don't have the complementary players. Like, it should be Jusuf Nurkić, but he no-showed because he had no chance against Anthony Davis.
Right.
And like Al-Farouq Aminu, you know, put up 17 points, 9 rebounds. That's frankly better than you could have expected from him.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Evan Turner missed one of those games. Mo Harkless missed 2 of those games. Like Ed Davis, Zach Collins, Napier, Pat Connaughton, they're all fine players, but like you can't count on them to be that number 3 option if Dame or CJ is struggling. So I'm with you. I don't think it's necessarily time to break up this backcourt, but I think it's more of a conversation now than it was before the series. And, you know, I don't think Portland should go into this summer saying we were the number 3 seed, we're totally fine. Because, like, what, they were the number 3 seed by 1 game?
Yeah.
You know, how close were they to... They were games from missing the playoffs. I don't think they
do, though. Do you think they do that? I don't... I mean, look... Even if you felt comfortable at the 3 spot, getting swept, regardless of who you are swept against, I don't think you go into the summer going, we're fine.
Right. And that leads to the next question then, is now we need to look at their free agents.
Mm.
Jusuf Nurkić is the big one, obviously.
Yeah.
If they re-sign him, they're going to be in the luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, not counting any of their other free agents.
Right.
So what do you do with Yusuf Nurkic?
You look at Nurkic and Collins, and you make a call. You make a call. You figure out who you think has the higher ceiling. Mm-hmm. Zach Collins could fit in like as an offensive big on this team as like a glove because he can shoot, yep, and he's multifaceted.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing you need to figure out with Nurkic. You need to figure out if he can shoot the three.
Yeah.
I mentioned this on this podcast at least three times already. I'm going to mention it a fourth.
Mm.
Nurkic has every mechanic like in his shooting motion to be able to shoot the three. We've seen him hit pure step-back jump shots over an extended DeMarcus Cousins from 20 feet away from the basket. This guy has some shooting ability. It's just a question of can he mentally get outside the three-point line and start hitting threes.
Right.
If he can, then he and Zach Collins together would be a very nice bet in the long-term future. And Lord knows they're young enough to, you know, be long-term projects. Like, Nurkic is 23, 24. Collins mm-hmm. is 20. So there's definitely more potential to be squeezed. But if Nurkic, like if you have a conversation with Nurkic and you tell him, you know, we plan to use you as sort of a spot-up three-point shooter on occasion, much like Jonas Valanciunas, and he reacts negatively to that and goes, well, that's not my game,
mm-hmm.
then I think he kind of made that decision for you.
Yeah.
And then you move forward with Collins and you put every ounce of the development coaching staff's attention to him.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to your point about him being a pretty good mid-range shooter, from 16 feet up until three-point range, he shot 37.6% this past year, 37.3% over his four-year career. So you're right. Like, in theory, it shouldn't be that huge of a development for him mm-hmm. to start hitting those threes. But this, I mean, throughout his career, he has yet to hit one. He's only taken 13. So, yeah, I mean, we've seen this everywhere. Like, this is the way the NBA is going. And even these traditional bigs like a Nurkic, you know, Marc Gasol had to add it to his game. Al Horford had to add it to his game.
DeMarcus Cousins. Jonas Valanciunas. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Nikola Vucevic as well. Like, all of these. Brook Lopez, too.
Pau Gasol is, too.
Yeah. Like, this is just a necessary ingredient if you're going to be a good starting long-term center. You don't have to hit 45% from three-point range,
mm-mm.
but you need to be a threat from that. Like, we see a guy like Hassan Whiteside get played off the goddamn floor because he isn't a threat from three-point range and he can't cover three-point shooting bigs. You don't have a role. Like, you know, it's just teams aren't going to run 100 post-up plays for a post-up big anymore. Like, that's just not an efficient shot compared to a corner three. So, yeah, I mean, I think the question for Portland is, are you willing to pay the luxury tax for a team that is significantly below a Golden State and a Houston? We don't know what's going to happen with a lot of these other contenders or, like, the next, like, second-tier teams. Like, if Kawhi comes back, the Spurs, I would put them above Portland. If the Thunder just run it back and stay healthy and get Roberson back, I think they're probably still above Portland as well. So, like, you're paying the luxury tax for a team that's at best probably like the fourth or fifth best team in the West, like, assuming everyone stays healthy on every team. So to that point, like, you know, I know you gave up a lot for Nurkic a year ago, but man, it's really hard to justify keeping him, right? Like, you gave up,
right?
I guess, yeah, it's just like, this is like the thing we always talk about. Do you double down on your mistake, basically? Or do you just say, like, you know what? We can't do this. Like, we have to just...
Maybe I'm being too optimistic here, but when I look at this Portland team, like, 14 players participated in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
None are over 30. So I look at that roster and I feel there's still more potential to come. I know that CJ and Dame specifically they're close to being maxed out of their potential. Like, they are getting the high minutes and they are in their primes. I don't think we're going to see like major leaps from them. Mm-hmm. But it's a good question that you pose here, because it really is, do you trust Yusuf Nurkic to keep developing? Like, in a nutshell, that's what you're asking. It's a tough question. I don't know, but I do trust that there are a lot of other guys on that roster that will develop further. Like Caleb Swanigan, I think he's got some real potential. I already mentioned Zach Collins. Wade Baldwin was very disappointing in Memphis. He didn't play a lot this year as well in Portland. But I think there's something there. When he came out, like, he was a 3-and-D point guard. Mm-hmm. I don't think that magically goes away. I think that's in there somewhere. It can be unlocked. Maybe not to reach the potential he had coming into the draft, but as a backup, potentially, why not? I mean, I feel there's something left on this Portland squad that I would feel is a wasted opportunity if you don't see what it is. And if that includes Nurkic, that's the big question. Like, because again, like, you just said it, if you don't adjust and shoot that three, there's a ceiling. There's a significant ceiling. Either he has to become an elite defender, really, like an elite defender, or he has to become a multifaceted big. So I would probably roll the dice on Nurkic, and then if things don't work out necessarily, I would nene him. So re-sign him, only to trade him later. Yeah. And see, because I could put a lot of development into Nurkic and then say, okay, even if you don't shoot the three and you don't become like an elite defender, we can still polish what you do, what you can do right now. Like, maybe we turn you into a better rebounder. Maybe we polish off the passing, because he's got some nice passing angles. Like, he understands how to pass. He can rebound. He can block shots. So maybe you fine-tune all those things, and then you determine when he's somewhat of a finished product, you know, you trade him for something that's more fitting. I don't know. I wouldn't feel good if I'm Portland just to leave an asset.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. The problem is, like, if you re-sign him, you're already in the tax. Yeah. Now you've got Ed Davis as an unrestricted free agent. Shabazz Napier is a restricted free agent. Pat Connaughton's a restricted free agent. So just to retain those guys would cost multiple of their salary, because you're in the tax. And again, like, this is the best you're hoping for is the three seed. Like, this season was really, at least in terms of the regular season, was the best possible outcome you can hope for if you're Portland, because you are still a tier below Golden State and Houston. So, like, you can't really add anyone of import unless, again, you're willing to pay multiple of their however much their contract is. So, I mean, like, I ask these questions and I don't know the answers. I don't think there are good answers. I kind of think Portland's screwed until, you know, the Evan Turner, Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless contracts come off the books. Because, like, Dame and CJ are making close to, I mean, Dame's at almost $28 million next year. CJ's at almost $26 million. That's $54 million right there. And then you've got Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard. Evan Turner's at almost 18. Mo Harkless is 11. Myers is a 10.5.
Right. Like, no, it's a lot.
Yeah, with those five guys alone, you're almost at the cap already.
Okay, question then. Because they're young, and because they have Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan, both are like 20, 21, do you offer someone the 24th pick in this year's draft? And mind you, this year's draft is not as deep as last year's. Like, after the first 10 or 12 picks, maybe 14, there is a severe, like, jump in quality, or not fall in quality, rather. They have the 24th pick.
Yeah.
Do you see if someone takes that for, like, Myers Leonard? Like, if you take on Myers Leonard's deal.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, my God, absolutely.
Right? Like, I've seen split opinions on this. I've seen people say, we'll only give up 24th if it means that Evan Turner's off the books. And
oh, no.
The reasoning for that, I would agree. I kind of get the reasoning behind it. I disagree with it, but I kind of get why Portland fans say this. They mentioned that the 24th pick is cost controlled for 4 years. And it's one of the only ways to sort of have a chance of getting that for type of star. Like, maybe someone they draft could turn into that. I get the logic behind it, but at 24th, it's just such a long shot that I would just go the route of saying, get Myers Leonard off the books for the 24th. I would just do that.
24 is not nearly enough to, or if it's enough to get Evan Turner off the books, congratulations, Portland.
You're that's swindled. A slam dunk. Right.
But, at least Evan Turner, I mean, he's not living up to his $18 million salary, which, of course, he's not. But, at least he's playing. I mean, Myers Leonard's not even playing. Like, he's not doing anything. And he's
taking played 254 minutes this year.
Right. Like, that's the worst contract. I mean, in terms of, value provided to your team.
Right.
That's the biggest albatross on your team. Yes, Evan Turner is making more money, but he's at least contributing to in some capacity. Like, Myers Leonard is doing absolutely nothing. He's just stealing $11 million to not play basketball.
Right, and he's going to be, let me look at the numbers here. It's almost going to be $22 million that Myers Leonard is earned or owed after this year. Yep. $22 million. So basically, a team would pay $22 million to take on the 24th pick. That's also a pretty high price. It is. That's why I was kind of surprised to see Portland fans argue that it should be Evan Turner, because then you'd be paying him $35 million.
Yeah.
Look
at what the Bulls. Like, the Bulls gave up Nico, who is a productive player, and they took back Omer Sheik and a first round pick, which is it's in that low 20s range as well.
22.
Right? Yeah, that's not enough. You're not, it's a low pick plus,
right?
You're just not going to be able to offload that much salary. I mean, again, if you do, congratulations, but any GM should ask for more. Maybe it's another first round pick down the line, like a heavily protected or lottery protected or whatever. And then you could start, two first round picks to get off one of those contracts. Yeah, that would probably do it. But no, the number 24 pick is not enough to get out of Evan Turner's deal. And frankly, getting out of Myers Leonard's deal should be the bigger priority, because that would free up. I mean, again, shed that close to, what is he? He's at $10.6 million next year.
Right.
Now it starts, then you start to be able to have the conversation. All right, we can re-sign Yusuf Nurkic and maybe stay under the luxury tax. Like, that would be a huge win. Mm-hmm. So, I think they absolutely should be looking for ways to get out one of those deals, preferably Leonard. The 24 pick should absolutely be up for grabs. That's probably their best move they can make this offseason.
Right. And I should mention, the Portland fans on Twitter, that's obviously Twitter. I mean, this is not coming from the organization.
Right.
I just wanted to point that out. Very important.
Yeah. All right, Mort. Let's switch now to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, there are a bunch of questions with them as well. They have, unlike Portland and OKC, at least they don't have any, major contract decisions to make this summer, aside from Karl-Anthony Towns, which, if you're the Timberwolves, you're giving him a max extension on July 1st, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I don't like his progression of late, but you gotta. I mean, he's just too special not to. Yeah.
If you max out Andrew Wiggins, you're maxing out Karl-Anthony Towns. Yeah,
exactly.
Not only are you maxing him out, but you're giving him one of the designated extensions makes an all NBA team, that's probably worth negotiating with him. With Joel Embiid's extension, he only gets the 30% if he's first team all NBA, MVP, or DPOY.
And hey, Karl-Anthony Towns, earned DPOY.
Right. Right.
That's
but for Towns, you might want to make it, that same criteria rather than it could be any of the all NBA teams, and he actually could make one either this year or next year. So if you're Minnesota, I think the decision to max him out is not a decision. You're obviously doing that. It's which criteria do you allow for him to hit that 30% threshold? And that I think is more fair. I think if maybe say you get 30 if you hit all NBA first, 27.5 if you hit the second, whatever. Bake some contingencies in there so you're not paying him 30 if he gets all NBA third team, because that's very realistic next year.
Yeah, I would agree.
Instead, Mort, we need to ask first about their coach, because, I mean, we ragged on him a lot throughout the year, and a lot of the same problems we ragged on him during the season came up in the playoffs as well. Yeah. So he right now he has control over personnel as well as he's the head coach of the team. Mm-hmm. Do you think Minnesota needs to revisit either side of that?
I think they need to just rid themselves of tips now. I just want to say one thing, because people have misunderstood what I've said about tips. When he was in Chicago, like, yes, he would overplay some of his guys, but it was never this bad. It was never this bad as it's been this year in Minnesota. Virtually no one off the bench played. It was ridiculous. Yeah. So I just want to just make that separation between Chicago tips and Minnesota tips, because that's not the same dude. Yeah. While I was defending Chicago tips, it was because they needed to have like a two-way player on the court, because guard packs more or less started drafting one-way players. So right. So the need for having like a Luol Deng or a Jimmy Butler type on the court at all times was, or a Joakim Noah, who at that point in time was a two-way player because he could contribute offensively, that was necessary to just win games. In Minnesota, you had Gorgui Dieng off the bench. You had Tyus Jones.
Yep.
I mean, you had guys who could participate and play and contribute, but you wouldn't allow them to? Like, Tips became, you know, a character, a parody of himself this year. And because of that, I would just go as far as say, you know what? If you double down on yourself in this capacity, you're not going to improve. You're not going to learn. Yeah. Like, we've talked about this before. He spent the year off that he had visiting with virtually every franchise in the NBA, trying to pick people's brains. And if you come out of a meeting with Greg Popovich and you think, oh, I should stick to my own shit, then you have a problem.
Right. Right. So I think we have yet to hear what the Pistons are going to do with Stan Van Gundy, so this is going to be a similar situation. But I think if you're Minnesota, you should strip personnel control right away. And if that causes Tibbs to resign, so be it. Otherwise, I would keep him as head coach, just because you've got a big... I mean, this coming season, like 2017-18 was a big season for them. They snapped the playoff drought. They got Jimmy Butler and Taj, and like they really took a step forward in their rebuild, which is great. This coming season is huge for them, because Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent. He could opt into his $19.8 million player option for 2019-20, but he is not going to, barring a catastrophic career threatening injury. Jeff Teague, we don't know. He's got a $19 million player option for 2019-20, but like they've got. I mean, they have all their guys coming back, or all of their core guys coming back for this season. So I don't necessarily think you want going into that and like coming off of, frankly, in terms of wins, I think it was their best season since, it was definitely since the Kevin Garnett era. I forget if it was 2003 or 2004 or 2005. So I don't think you want to like throw out his whole system and make all those guys learn a new system going into this. That said, if he sticks to this same like, overplaying his starters, not trusting his bench, or you know, if they bring back Derrick Rose and becoming over reliant on Derrick Rose, then I think it's a conversation you have either during the middle of next season or ideally after next season, when you're when you're approaching Jimmy Butler and trying to get him to re-sign, you know, if it's still an issue. And same with Taj Gibson. Like, I know those guys are loyal to Tibbs because they played under Tibbs in Chicago and they respect him, but at the same time, you heard Gibson and Teague throughout this season, there were some like public comments basically saying like, we're tired, play the bench more. And if Tibbs, you know, like if you, Minnesota's the ownership really needs to like sit down with him and say like, this shit was not acceptable this year. Like, we made some great strides, but if you don't address these weaknesses, like every, you know, this is like exit meetings. Every team has exit meetings with every player, and they say, like, this is what we want you to focus on this summer. Like, you're not a good three-point shooter. Become one. Or, like, really work on that shot. For Tibbs, it's going to be, A, learn how to distribute minutes and, like, trust your bench more. We will do what we can to get you a better bench but you have to, like, we don't have control over the minutes and the rotations. Right. Like, that's all you. So, you know, we'll do our part to set you up because we're, again, we're going to strip personnel control. We're going to get someone in to really give you a more well-rounded team. And B, embrace math. Like, three is more than two. Don't, your team cannot shoot the fewest number of threes.
Back to the school bench tips. Learn
right.
math.
Yeah, like, right. You just have a chalkboard that just said three. Make him write it over like Bart Simpson. Three is more than two. Three is more than two. Until it sinks into his head. Because, like, this is, I know this system worked in Chicago 10 years ago. But, like, the Warriors within the past half decade led to a strategic shift. And the Rockets have followed suit, and, like, the rest of the league is also...
And Tibbs forced that change initially, which is the fun part. Yeah,
right. So, like, you need to adapt with the rest of the league, or you're going to be left behind. So, yeah, that would be my approach with Tibbs this offseason if I was Minnesota. Mm.
I am actually curious to see what you would think about switching the role. Like, actually stripping Tibbs of being head coach and leaving him for front. Because... I mean, what he did trade-wise was pretty good. He signed Taj Gibson to a pretty decent deal. I mean, obviously there was a lot of assistance coming from the entire front office staff. I mean, he didn't do it alone.
Yeah.
But he seems to have like a solid understanding of how to build a team. The question is though, if like the three is more than two argument, that's still a thing in the front office. Like, because if you go out and you sign guys who are not strong three-point shooters, and you go, oh, we can win either way, then you're effectively screwing your whole team. So, yeah.
I mean, given the type of contract negotiations they're about to have, starting with Towns this summer and then with Butler and presumably Teague next summer, I would be reluctant. Like, I just get a fucking salary cap guy in there. Like, this is what, like,
these paging Mark Deegs.
Right, like, to the Timberwolves, and, like, I'm sure they have a cap guy, but I'm sure Tibbs like ignores him and calls him a nerd and kicks him. Like, like, this is like these teams that don't have these, you know, that rely on these coaches for GMs. Like, it's just so dumb. Like, there are
Tibbs,
people who
corner threes are a good thing. Nerd,
right? Like, there are people who are very good at this kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And just, like, in the basketball journalism sphere. Like, not even... We don't even know in terms of actual...
All the block boys.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm relatively convinced a Mark Deeks or an Eric Pincus could run a front office better than a Stan Van Gundy or a Tom Thibodeau.
Oh, I don't think that's even a question. And that's really what's, at times, heartbreaking about this league, isn't it? Sometimes you just get guys who are in charge of huge things and getting like millions a year, and you just look at it and go, a toddler can do better.
Right. So yeah, I would lean toward keeping Tibbs as the coach rather than GM. I would want a GM with like experience negotiating that kind of stuff, especially considering the types of issues they're about to encounter next year.
I would force one thing upon Tibbs' coaching life.
What's that?
An offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Like, if he resigns because of that, so be it. But
yeah,
I need to see some improvements offensively. Like, what he's doing is like what he's done all year is just basically letting Jimmy play point guard.
Right. That's, like, ironically, their offense was good this year. Like, they were fourth in terms of offensive efficiency. Like, their defense was the weak spot, but like, I agree.
The
system,
the best players, right?
Like, the system was not sound. It was just like, we have Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns, and you don't.
Exactly. I mean, Jimmy Butler. I think you could get so much more out of Jimmy if. Here's the thing. Back when he was in Chicago, I used to scream at the front office like to get him help in terms of shooters. Like, you know the Seth Curry idea I floated around. Yep. Then they signed Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. Like, we honestly don't know what Jimmy Butler could become if he was surrounded by shooters.
Yep.
And I happen to believe that he would be a whole level above what he is right now. Like, the perception. Like, he's always been good. I think he's a lot closer to James Harden than what people think. Like, the average fan thinks.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh my God, that would become real if right. he had shooters around him.
I agree. So that actually leads me to my big question for the Timberwolves, aside from Tom Thibodeau one, and I know you're going to enjoy this. Should they be shopping Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah.
So I ask this because I saw Nate Jones of Goodwin Sports, who's Jones on the NBA on Twitter. He mentioned it last night, and he actually pitched a deal centered around Wiggins for CJ McCollum, which I think is actually pretty interesting for both sides.
I don't think it's interesting for Portland, but yeah, I mean, I would love it for the Timberwolves. Look, I mean,
that's fair.
Look, we're talking about how Yusuf Nurkic needs to develop a three.
Yeah.
And then you add in Andrew Wiggins, so you have two non-shooters in the lineup, and you take one who's an elite shooter off. I don't like that for Portland.
I mean, Wiggins, he's not a good three-point shooter, but he did hit 33.1% from three on 4.1
attempts. Wow, less than the third.
I know. Yeah. I know. But, like, he is capable of hitting three-pointers, whereas we have literally not seen Yusuf Nurkic hit a three-pointer
That's
in
true.
NBA career so far.
Andrew Wiggins is capable of hitting a three in less than one-third of a time. Yep.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, your point is sound. And, like, I don't want this to turn into another let's crap on Andrew Wiggins, because we've done that a lot this year. But I think the overall point is, like, yeah, I think, there is the report from Darren Wolfson, Derek James of 1500 ESPN relayed it, I think it was like in mid-March, where he said Wiggins is getting frustrated being like the third banana behind Jimmy and Towns, which, tough shit. Like,
yeah.
It's the same thing with Carmelo behind Russ and PG. Like, you're not as good as them. So, yes, like, your coach has accurately identified that you are not as good as these other two players, and he's distributed shots accordingly. Like, who cares? So, if I'm Minnesota, Wiggins, like, there's still upside there. I'm gonna go to my grave saying this.
I never disagreed with that. By the way, if we talk about how great Chris Middleton is, we'd have like the NBA pop trifecta.
Yeah, we really would. Yeah, unfortunately, that has to wait until we do the Eastern Conference, but that will be coming regardless. I think it's at least a conversation that Minnesota should explore this summer.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The McCollum idea caught my eye. So I was like, oh, wow, that would actually, you're right. For Portland, Minnesota would probably, I would assume, have to throw in more. Like, I don't think you could do a straight one-for-one swap.
Oh, no. Yeah. No.
But, like, that's it's pretty interesting.
It is, but you know what? I remember when I floated a trade idea consisting of aforementioned Chris Middleton for Wiggins. Laughed off.
Yeah. No, it's...
I'm just saying.
Yeah, like, I think in terms of right
now...
That
was like 2 years ago, by the way.
Right. Well, because 2 years ago, at least Wiggins, when you could cling to the upside, it was only 2 years into his career. Now we've seen him just be the same player, like... a high volume, middling efficiency who doesn't really do anything else aside from score.
And even that, he doesn't do well. I mean,
Right. Yeah. That's the middling efficiency. Like,
oh my
God,
we're crapping on him again. I'm sorry.
It's not my attention.
It just happens because when you're not delivering it,
Right. Like that. Yeah. Who would you rather have right now? Chris Middleton or Andrew Wiggins? Anyone who says Andrew Wiggins is wrong. That said, Andrew Wiggins, like, he's much younger. If he does develop, if like Jimmy Butler's tutelage eventually sinks in and pays off, like, he still has the upside. It's just like, I'm becoming less and less convinced he's gonna reach that upside. Like, he's not the next Michael Jordan, or he's not like the next LeBron that he was hailed as coming into the draft. Like, he could still be an all-star one day, maybe.
Yeah,
but,
like, he could. I just wanted to say that don't think for a second I'm not in agreement here.
Right.
Okay, because people think I look at him as a sort of a G League player. That's not
the case. No. Yeah, like, he can still be a high-level NBA player. Right. But, like, on this Timberwolves team, I think there would be better ways to spend $25 million, as they're going to have to, starting next year. Mm. So that goes into the question. We had a similar question about Portland. Like Portland, without factoring any free agents, Minnesota's already $110 million in terms of guaranteed salary next year. So, you know, assuming they don't trade Wiggins or anything. Jamal Crawford has a $4.5 million player option. Bielica's going to be a restricted free agent. They don't really have anyone else of note. Right. I guess Cole Aldridge, actually. He's got almost $7 million non-guaranteed. I'm going to guess that he is going bye-bye before that guarantee kicks in, which I think is in the end of... Yeah.
He's gone.
June. Yeah. He's got $2 million guaranteed, according to Basketball Insiders. But yeah, they'd save $5 million basically by cutting him, or $4.9 million by cutting him. So
yeah, that was always a bad deal.
You have to assume he's gone. But again, that doesn't leave them much space before they brush up against the luxury tax. So are there any free agents who you have in mind, not named Derrick Rose, that they should be going after this summer?
Oh, it's a good question. I haven't really scoured the free agency pool yet, intensively. Not to the extent where I can sit here and identify mid-level exception guys yet. So I wouldn't feel comfortable.
The reason I ask it is because if you're in that boat, if you're a mid-level guy, if you're a guy who's just like ready to ring chase and you're ready to take the minimum, Minnesota is not the place where you're going to choose first, right? Like you're going to say Golden State, you're going to say Houston, you're going to say Boston, you're going to say Philly. Then Minnesota might, you know, wherever LeBron ends up. But like then we could start getting into the Minnesota tier. But like I don't think they're going to have their pick of the litter because they're not going to be able to offer more money than any other team. Like they're all going to be working with the same amount of money. So like I don't think they're going to get that top tier mid-level guy or that top tier, you know, like a Bellinelli or an Ilyasova, or like guys who are willing to just ring chase and
Isaiah Thomas?
Oh. Fuck. God. I mean, you're not wrong.
Just saying,
I would guess he's not gonna. He will not be signing a mid-level on the first day of free agency.
I'm just saying, like if they don't find anyone, he doesn't find a deal. I mean, that's not the guy they need at all. But you can't really look a gift horse in its mouth. Yeah. So if he wants to go there, it'd be like, okay.
I would say a guy like Hezonja would actually be kind of interesting there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much. Very much.
Because it's Tibbs, I feel like you have to just basically prioritize veterans. So maybe like an Anthony Tolliver.
I love Anthony Tolliver, but he's like 32 at this point. They need some youth. They need youth. Yeah. Hezonja is actually a pretty smart... That would be a pretty smart signing.
Yeah.
Here's what would hurt a little bit. Like if Hezonja keeps going upwards, like his trajectory right now is pretty good.
Yeah.
At what point does a tweet come out like in the middle of the season comparing his stats to Wiggins? His advanced numbers are looking very similar, and you just attach his contract's number.
Right. Yeah, that's a very fair question. Another Rodney Hood could be an interesting guy as well.
He's gonna get more though. Cleveland they don't have an argument. They need to like pay more.
He hasn't been good.
Like, he's been bad.
He's been bad. More, I don't think. But you're right. He probably is going to be more. But yeah, I mean that the reason I ask it is because like I don't think there are that many really good options for them. So I feel like they're going to have to run back the same core more or less, which is fine. Like if Jimmy Butler doesn't get hurt, they're probably a 50-win team. They were 47 without him, so you have to assume another year under Tibbs' system. Like, they would probably be a top four seed in the West, but again, barring like dramatic changes from any of these players, just feels like they're still a step below.
But we've still yet, even though we've talked about the Timberwolves for 20, 25 minutes, we've yet to hit on the biggest thing.
What's that?
Karl Anthony Towns does not seem happy. He seems to have, I don't want to say regressed, because I don't feel he's regressed. He's just stagnated. That's the word I was looking for. He's sort of stagnated, and you hear all the rumblings about him not being happy, and he used to play with joy. Mm-hmm. Like, these things matter. I know that people are like, oh, that doesn't matter. When you earn your paycheck, you shouldn't matter whether you're, like, happy or not. Mm-hmm. That shit matters. Like, if you're not happy, you're not going to get put forth your best effort. You're not going to be dominating. You're not going to be the guy who you ultimately want to become. Mm-hmm. So I feel at some point we're going to have to look at that situation. We're going to have to gauge, like, is Carl okay? Is he going to be the guy who wants to be there long term? Is he going to be the guy who really wants to establish himself as like a Minnesota stronghold?
Right.
I'm not sure right now. And then you have to identify, like, if the answer is no, then you have to identify why not. And you have to correct that. Likely it means Tibbs, but what the hell do you do if the answer is not Tibbs, but Jimmy Butler?
Oof. I mean, I would assume, much like I've assumed with Kawhi, that just $150 million has a good way of smoothing things over. But it's a fair question. And
some guys just don't work that way, though. Like, some people, even though they earn a lot of money, if they're not happy, like, that's very important.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it with Kristaps when the Knicks, not this year, but, like, remember he, like, skipped the exit meetings and his brother was talking about him, like, not taking an extension from them and playing like qualifying offer. Yeah, which I don't think that's an option anymore. But, I mean, I think Towns is in this one in Minnesota for the long haul. I do think whatever issues he has with the organization, he has enough cachet that they will, like, they'll build around him rather than vice versa. They know that he is their franchise player and that he's the guy they want to build around for the next 10 to 15 years. Obviously, they hope he gets better defensively, but, you know, I don't think that's a huge issue on their end, but it's a fair point.
Yeah.
All right, boy, let's close things out with the San Antonio Spurs. And we've been dancing around the Kawhi question for weeks now. So let's talk.
I love the outline in the email, by the way. Time for the big Kawhi discussion.
Yeah.
Like, we know nothing about this situation. And we we know nothing.
I know. It's fair, but we've seen reports now that the Spurs, I forget who reported it. I want to say someone from, I think it was Michael C. Wright from ESPN, that the Spurs, like, top priority this summer is having a big sit-down meeting with Kawhi. Mm. There is some reluctance in the organization to give
him that.
Also
called the LaMarcus Aldridge special.
Right. Yeah. So there's some reluctance in the organization, apparently, to give him that big $219 million Supermax until they smooth things over, which makes sense. Do you think things get smoothed over more, or do you think there are some serious Kawhi trade discussions this summer?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. Like, I think there will be some pretty big trade discussions if things are not smoothed over. I mean,
yeah. Which side do you lean right now?
It's, you know, a part of me was kind of hesitant to bring up the Spurs because there are so many variables we don't know about. Like, when Pop lost his wife recently, Aaron, we like, let's be honest here. We don't know if Pop is coming back.
Right?
I don't think we know. I don't think anyone knows. If Pop decides to retire, that changes everything. Like,
the
entire culture changes from one day to another. You really don't know who's going to stick around, who's not going to stick around. So we're just left with so many big question that's an impossible thing to answer. I mean, I hope that he sticks around. I hope everything works out. And but here's what I won't say. I won't say that I hope Pop comes back because that's not my call. That's not my decision. Right. I mean, he just had one of the biggest losses in his life, I presume. I mean, it would have to be. They were married for over 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever he decides, I mean, he's earned it. If he wants to come back, perfect. You know, that's awesome. If he wants to retire, also perfect. That's awesome. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, we should all bow down in his glory, honestly.
Right.
So I think the Kawhi question is so difficult to isolate because of all these unknown factors. I will say this. For Spurs basketball, which has meant a great deal to all of us, even, you know, non-fans as us of the Spurs, mm-hmm. it's been such a class organization for decades.
Right.
That you want to see the best happen to them. Yep. And because of that, I hope things get smooth over with Kawhi. I hope they figure something out that makes sense for both sides. I hope they get some clarification on what the hell happened this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope that both sides sits down for like 5 hours and they gain a higher understanding of each other and where they came from. I hope they embrace and I hope they apologize to one another. And whatever happens in terms of like, let's split up, let's stick together.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that if they end things, I hope they end things on good terms.
Yeah.
That's really what I can say to this situation. I think this situation was much easier like a month ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, before that horrendous loss. Because I think that changes a lot and rightfully so.
That's a fair point. It looms over a lot of their other decisions this summer too. Like Tony Parker is a free agent. He says he wants to come back.
Mm.
If Pop comes back, I would assume they would bring him back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he said, like, Parker has said he's fine with being a backup behind Murray, which is great because that's what he needs to be. But, yeah, I mean, it seems like a fair question. If Pop retires, would Tony as well? Would he then be less attached to the Spurs? You're right. Like, I feel like every team that got knocked out in the first round of the West has some uncertainty hanging over them. No organization more so than the Spurs right now.
No, right. They're in... Is it too harsh to say they're in flux? Because I kind of feel it is, though. Like, they still have a very well-established culture that they can lean on. Like, Pop leaves, regardless if he leaves or not. Like, but let's assume for a second that he does. He'll still leave a footprint for the entire organization to rally behind, which I think is crucial for their continued success.
Yep.
But ultimately, you will have to change the culture to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, personalities shape cultures, and a new personality, I mean, you're not getting a Pop clone. You are
I could see, like, one of, like, a Messina just taking over and, you know, them trying to continue. Like, I don't think, if Pop resigned, I don't think they would go outside the organization with the possible exception of bringing Budenholzer back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think they would like, I think they would try to keep it in the Spurs family just try to maintain some semblance of culture, but you're right. Like if a Messina takes over or Ime Udoka takes over, it's still going to be different than Greg Popovich, who is
exactly because it's not Greg.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, he's been the rock on that community for more than 20 years. So
exactly. And you know, it might not be a bad thing. I mean, because at some point, regardless, I mean, even if Pop, you know, coached until, you know, he passed away, theoretically, mm-hmm. Then that change would come eventually down the line, regardless.
Right.
Like he was even toying with the idea of hanging him up before LaMarcus came aboard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of inevitable, and it might not be the worst thing in the world for the Spurs to sort of think about the future. Like with this all this uncertainty, it might be a good thing for RC Buford to sit down with the front office even and go, okay, we have so many unknown factors playing right now that it might be a very good exercise for us to try to think 5 years ahead and mm-hmm. try to imagine what this would be like under a different management and a different line of thinking, like a new coach. I mean, mm-hmm. how do we adapt? How do we maintain the core of the values that we have? And what areas are we going to be more flexible in? And to that note, I'll just say this. Apparently, Frank Isola, said that practice time was a big concern of Kawhi.
Yeah.
Spoiler, we don't know the source of this one, but we know for a fact that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, the Spurs just don't practice as much
as
most organizations. And, like, it was John Diaz on Twitter, who he's Houston via San Antonio, but he writes for Project Spurs. He refuted that report.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it was Friday. And he said it's well documented how little the Spurs practice during the season. There's a story where Kawhi demands Pop to lighten up practice is hilarious. Yeah. Also, the New York Daily News, LOL.
Like, that's the thing. Like, everyone knows it.
Right.
That was my joke.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's the thing, right? Everyone knows it. Like, the Spurs are the definition of sitting guys out.
Right.
Of keeping, you know, fresh legs, fresh mentalities, like a thing. They are the one who's gotten in trouble with the NBA so many times for sitting healthy players.
Yep.
They don't overwork their players in practice. It is such an absurd idea that everyone knows it, apparently, except for Frankie Sola.
Yeah.
Which is just, and that was my point. Like, everyone knows it. Spoiler, everyone knows it.
Right.
It's dumb.
And I think it speaks to a larger point in that we've seen a lot of reporting about this Kawhi situation, and we'll continue to see a lot. And most of it is probably bullshit. Like, we just don't know what's going on. The only people who know what's going on with that situation, not even the people in the locker room, I think. Like, the teammates have said, we don't really know. The only people who know what's going on are Kawhi, RC Buford, and Pop. And if those three guys can hammer out their differences, then, I think we'll see Kawhi sign the Supermax this summer, and the Spurs will continue being the Spurs. And if they can't, we'll reevaluate then. But, your point to, like, I'm not going to trust a reporter from the New York Daily News to have a well-sourced,
look, everyone who's close to the game, like you and I and everyone else who's just, like, following the NBA on an hourly basis knows this. And for some reason, the Isola piece got a lot of burn on Twitter. A lot of people are like, oh my God, Pop should dial it down.
Right.
You are dumb. I'm sorry, but if you do not know that the Spurs are this kind of franchise that values, you know, rest and don't overwork their players in practice, nor never, and obviously not games, like, then you haven't been paying attention. Sorry, you're not dumb. That was harsh of me. I apologize.
Right.
That's harsh.
Right.
But you are uninformed. Stop saying those things. It's not true. That is dumb. Like, that entire situation is just not and has never been an issue. And I think that's one of the things that the Spurs are going to continue with. Because why stop a thing that works? You know? I mean, they would never get a Tom Thibodeau character in there. Never.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever. I think they'll screen every possible head coach so well for past weaknesses.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap up. We will be back on Monday. We'll have an episode about Eastern Conference. We will preview the semifinals, and then we'll also do the Bye Felicia for the four teams that got knocked out there. So keep an eye out on our Twitter account, the NBA Pod. On Twitter, at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio as well, so we'll be tweeting out the links throughout the week too, so check those out. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I can never have a good one again because I have to go watch Infinity War every single day. It's that good.
That's true. Yeah, we'll save our spoilers for next episode. But in the meantime, everyone go see it so we don't ruin it for you.
Yeah, like everyone. And we will spoil it in a week.
Yeah. Right. All right. Later, Mort.
Later.